Now, in case you might have missed the clue, today we're wrapping up a 3-week worship series focused on our role as stewards or caretakers of the countless blessings that God entrusts to us. Yes, God entrusts every single one of us to be responsible managers of treasures that God has put in our lives for useful purposes. 2 weeks ago, we considered the question, what is enough? And we found that the Bible helps us realize that because we have the gift of Jesus in our lives, we have what we truly need. And last time, this sermon tackled those tough questions that go through our heads anytime we're asked to consider giving a gift like an offer. Questions like, how much should I give? And what do I owe? And what's my fair share? We came to the conclusion that what's really at issue is what's expected. And we noted that as caretakers of God's wealth of blessings, what's expected is that in our giving, grateful, we are joyful, we are generous, and yes, we are even a little sacrificial. In the extreme example, Jesus was willing to go beyond merely taking care of himself. Jesus sacrificed to provide an everlasting blessing to the world, to a much more humble degree, we are expected to sacrifice too, to extend ourselves beyond the mindless, unconsidered token, to step out of our comfort zone in order to know that our gift is not only making a difference in our church, but it's making a difference in us. So this is the final installment of this worship series that I entitled Satisfied. I came up with the title of the series and this year's stewardship campaign based on the Apostle Paul's self-assessment of his faith. Paul realized that his ability to rest his trust in God enabled him to be satisfied with whatever he did or did not. When you travel with me on my next trip to the Holy Land in a few years, one of the places that you will visit is a site called the Mount of the Beatitudes. Now, that's a modern name for a hillside overlooking the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. In the centuries since Jesus walked all over those hills and shorelines, this certain spot has been revered as the kind of locale where Jesus would have preached to the crowd gathered on the hillside below him. Tradition says that the Mount of the Beatitudes is where Jesus spoke what we have come to call his Sermon on the Mount. Matthew's version of the Sermon on the Mount, fills chapter 5, 6, and 7, contains a lot of verses that you would find familiar. Among them is a verse that says, you cannot serve both God and money. Maybe you grew up here and stated that you cannot serve both God and mammon. Mammon is just a Greek word for God. Jesus explains it this way. He says, no one can be a slave to two masters. He will hate the one and love the other, or he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. Now, Jesus wasn't saying it's hard to choose. He was cautioning that we cannot be completely devoted. We cannot be slaves to two masters. Let me suggest some examples of two masters. Many years ago, when we had young children at home, I felt that the demand to be productive here at work and also be engaged in the home life with my wife and boys. At various times, I'm sure I felt like I was enslaved to one of the two. Sometimes enslaved to the demand of church work, and other times enslaved to the demand of family. And if I poured all my energy and attention toward one, consequently the other was going to suffer. Or think how many businesses face the struggle of serving two masters. On the one hand, making the best product possible. And on the other hand, making an affordable and profitable product. Or think of a business striving to be an employer committed to being fair and generous and compassionate and responsible. While on the other hand, doing to your employees whatever is expedient in order to maximize return for stockholders, you can't be completely devoted to both. Or you can imagine church members who want to feel absolutely at home and comfortable with one another in a familiar church. But by the same token, they recognize their church's calling is to reach out and welcome the stranger. You can't be completely focused on both. You can't be a slave to strengthening your church's fellowship and always looking out for the newcomer. Now, maybe you're thinking, John, those are such extremes. Surely there can be balance. Of course, often that's the goal. But if you're slavishly serving one set of goals above all else, you can't also be completely devoted to the other set of goals. So in your personal life, you find yourself struggling to be completely devoted to serving two masters. For example, seeking a more helpful lifestyle and living what they used to call the high life of excess food and drink and sex and stimulants and sedatives. Or satisfying our consumeristic need for instant gratification while also saving it for tomorrow. Or feeding an insatiable desire to succeed and achieve, but also needing a quiet inner calling to be mindful of the now. Do you struggle to be completely devoted to two masters simultaneously? Well, if we can't be completely occupied by serving two masters simultaneously, then where do we put our trust? In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us, we need to be consumed by a panic sense that it's all we can do just to take care of ourselves. No. Jesus gently encourages us to realize that our lives unfold under the attentive eye of God. That our lives are lived within the compassionate heart of God. That our needs are met because of the generous hand of God. Now the world we live in is fair for that kind of that opposes living by faith. It's as though we're tied up forever, thinking that we should take off the training wheels to see where we can go on our own. The world tries to scare us into feeling scarcity, when we should be recognizing the reality of the abundance in our lives. We can be so focused on keeping a grip on what we have. What we're slow to realize is that if we loosen our grip and open our hands, not only are we able to share and meet the needs of others, but we'll discover that we already have an abundance of blessings and treasures and opportunities that we hadn't known it because we've been preoccupied with taking care of ourselves and keeping a hold of what we have. I didn't even notice that what we thought we needed wasn't so crucial after all. In the 5th century of the Christian era, a man named Irenaeus determined to live a holy life, so he abandoned the comforts of Egyptian society to follow and life out in the desert. And yet whenever Irenaeus visited the great city of Alexandria, he spent time wandering through its bazaars. When asked why, Irenaeus explained that his heart rejoiced at the sight of all the things he didn't need. Those of us who live in a society flooded with goods and gadgets need to ponder the example of Irenaeus. I saw recently that a typical supermarket in the United States back in 1976 stocked 9,000 different items. 9,000. Today, the average supermarket carries 47,000. Different items. I think half of them are flavors of food. But how many of them are absolutely essential? Of the 47,000, how many are superfluous? For the past few weeks, we've heard from Philippians chapter 4, where Paul made a bold confession to that poor little church that he started several years earlier. Paul had been raised in a fine Jewish home. He had received the best of education. He enjoyed the benefits of a life of privilege, especially the privilege of Roman citizenship, which provided him with priceless opportunities and protections. He had it all going for him. Paul thought he had it all. Until his eyes were opened by a blinding encounter with the risen Christ while Paul was traveling the road from Jerusalem up to Damascus. Paul realized that the comforts and privileges, the power and opportunities that he enjoyed in your place. Without accepting God's unconditional love and generous forgiveness. Up until then, Paul had put his trust in things that he could command. And Paul learned of God's gift of Jesus as our master and brother and friend. And that's what Paul realized. That he'd been putting his trust in himself and the things of the world he could command, control, accumulate. And Paul's eyes were open to recognize that his trust belonged to God rather than in himself. Okay, I probably can't get through a worship series like this without at least one part of the dog story. It's not remarkable. And it's not even a cute story. And part of the law is lapping his water out of his soupy bowl. Or he's chasing his dinner dispensing toy around the family room floor. When he's doing that, he forgets about everything else. He doesn't care about playing with the tennis ball. Or the prospect of going for a walk. Or deciding which of his three doggy beds he will take his next nap in. I have one that he doesn't care. When Parker is consumed by consuming water or food, when Parker is consumed by consuming, he doesn't realize that there are other opportunities out there for him. It's only when he lifts his head and looks beyond the daily needs that are absolutely going to be provided for him day after day, it's only when he looks up that he realizes he doesn't need to worry about whether he'll ever get another morsel. He remembers he can trust his provider. We'll gather. We'll provide for him. We'll love him. Back to Jesus speaking to those multitudes on that Galilean hillside. He challenged them about why they bothered being worried about the food and drink and clothing, the everyday needs of everyday life. Jesus asked, isn't life worth more than food and the body worth more than clothes? He reminded them that wildflowers don't labor to clothe themselves with such beauty, but God cares for the flowers, for his sake. So didn't people see that God would take even that much more care of them? Where was their faith? Where was their trust? We know where our trust can be. We are free from bondage to the material world when, by the example of Jesus, we learn to put our trust